Welcome back to Oh Snapped, season one, episode 11.
Yeah.
Where do they keep throwing them at us? We keep knocking them out of the park, you know?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. This one is Kristen Rossum.
It sounds so familiar to me.
I thought so too. I was like, don't I feel think? Like I recognize this name. Maybe there is somebody we know named Chrissy Rossum. Or isn't that an actress?
I don't know. Emmy Rossum.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking. I don't know. Anyway.
But the case itself is very similar. Like, it feels like we've been here before.
Maybe you saw this episode a long time ago.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I would think that I would remember a 30-minute long episode of Snapped, but who can know?
Who can know? This is an interesting one. It's a little bit different. It's not different in the sense that she had it all, okay? Because she did. She had it all.
Everyone... If you want to ensure that you're going to be on an episode of Snapped, the criteria is beautiful woman who has it all.
Yeah.
And that's it. But and killing someone. You got
to
kill someone.
Well, you got to kill somebody, yeah. Or at least try to have them killed. But it's just funny what they consider having it all. It's like, she had a job. She was married.
She had an apartment.
Yeah, like, I don't know. You can have those things and be unhappy. I mean, Snapped is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, but yeah. It helps their narrative, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. It's like on Dateline where they're like, she lit up a room or whatever. It's like, you have to have those things, I guess. So
right.
Snapped is, she had it all.
For American beauty Kristen Rossum, everything was coming up roses.
She was funny. She was smart. Oh, I thought she was just beautiful.
There's something about her that men find enchanting.
She catches your eye.
She had a promising career and a new husband who adored her.
Greg loved her more than anything.
But the pretty face hid a vicious secret. Lies, addiction, and murder next on Snapped.
Kristen Rossum at 24. She's young. She's beautiful. She's smart. She had it all. She just got married. She has her apartment.
She had it all.
Yeah. She lived in, like, the San Diego area. She had made a name for herself by the time she was 24 working in forensic toxicology. She worked at the medical examiner's office, which is, like, kind of a dream job for, like, me.
Yeah. I think it's pretty interesting. Yeah. We're going to find out why it's even more interesting for her had this job, but still.
Yeah. Her husband worked for an up-and-coming biotech firm, so, I mean, they're young, but they are both
go-getters.
Yeah, go-getters, hard workers. They are working their way up the ladder at where they are.
Yes. It said they had a trendy apartment in San Diego with sleek fittings and seagrass rugs. Is that a telltale sign of having it all? Seagrass rugs?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
clearly I don't have it all. I didn't even know what would warrant having it all.
No. Seagrass, rugs.
I don't have one seagrass anything.
And that's the problem.
Yeah.
That's a problem. She was born into privilege in the elite town of Claremont, California, and they said that she was essentially groomed for success.
Both of her parents expected nothing but perfection from her.
Yeah. She was a ballerina growing up, which I feel like is also, I don't know, I'm thinking of the movie Center Stage.
Oh, yeah.
And Maureen.
Yes.
And that was just, like, so much pressure on her, and she had to be perfect, and you have to be, like, very thin and, like, all these things to be a good ballerina per Center Stage.
Oh, of course, yes.
Yeah. So that's what I was thinking. I'm like, okay, that's a lot of pressure.
Well, and also she was a child model because she was gorgeous, like, picture perfection from day one.
Mm-hmm.
And she was beautiful. She was smart. She was talented. Like, she had literally had it all.
She had it all. Threw it away.
Threw
it away.
I mean, she tried, but that's a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot of pressure. Dr. James Murray, a forensic psychologist, said that
she grew up in a community where status, power, acclamation of others was extremely important. And in addition, her parents were particularly sensitive in promoting that kind of appearance by having her perform, having her trained in modeling in the theater.
Kristen's image was very important to her.
And to her family, her parents.
Yeah. They kind of had to have that. I mean, even later, like when she goes to trial, she's wearing pearls, you know, like it's like they always have to have this perfect persona, like in the public eye.
Yes.
Her father was a professor of political philosophy at the nearby College of McKenna College. Her mother was a marketing professor and directed the nonprofit programs at
Azusa.
Okay. Pacific University. I did not.
Azusa Pacific is a city in California.
Really?
Apparently.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Cool.
Cool.
Dr. Helen Smith said that probably, like, her parents and, like, their vision of success probably instilled in Kristen the drive to do well and how important it was to always be perfect, and she probably had a great deal of pressure to be perfect. And honestly, in a lot of these episodes so far, that's what we're hearing, is, like, that pressure to always be, you know, top of the class or, the perfect housekeeper or perfect mom or perfect wife or whatever, like all of these things. And these women are just breaking under the pressure. Yeah, it seems like
a freaking pressure cooker.
Yeah.
And let me correct myself. So it's just Azusa.
Oh,
it's the city.
Okay.
Just letting you know. Okay. I don't want people. I have been known to give false information on this show because the only Trident that I've ever heard of is the gum. I thought it was Triton. My bad, guys. I don't know. It's fine. I've learned.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It's fine.
But it's Azusa.
Azusa. Yes. Okay. Cool. Cool name.
Cool.
Super cool.
Cool.
We meet Rome Douglas, a high school friend of Kristen's, and he said that she was one of the most attractive girls at their school. And he's like, I can just picture it, you know, like standing outside the library with her jean skirt on.
And that's the end of that thought.
What was necessary about that in the interview?
I feel like there was more, obviously. They cut him off.
Yeah, they cut him off.
But why they chose include that?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, well, if you thought that was...
That's a nice memory.
Sure. I'm glad you have that memory. I guess it's a difference from Douglas Durst, who says, my memories are my memories. You may not know about them.
True.
He's sharing his memories.
Sure.
And that's nice
and
of him to do.
And you can share whatever one you want. That's
sure.
Fine. Then we talk to Kristen's ex-boyfriend, Theodore Maya. And he said she was just a lot of fun to be around. She was funny. She was smart. She was a little rebellious. Theodore had great things to say about her, but he definitely did say that she had a rebellious streak about her.
Yeah.
And then the narrator goes on to be like, she loved anything with a touch of danger. So in 1995, she went on an impulsive trip to Tijuana, Mexico. I don't know how safe Tijuana was in 95. The only thing that I've ever heard about Tijuana is like crime, crime, crime.
Yeah.
Scary, scary, scary.
And I guess, it's super close to San Diego, so...
It makes sense to go there.
Yeah, it makes sense to go there, but it's, she's what, 18?
Mm-hmm.
Seems like, I don't know. Her parents were probably like, either didn't know about it or were like, I don't like this idea.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
So she was still in school when she went to Tijuana, and she went for adventure, but she found love instead.
Oh.
She met Greg DeVillers, who was also a college student at the time.
Yeah. That night, they drove to Greg's apartment in La Jolla. So... He's got to have money, right? La Jolla is not a cheap area to live in no matter what.
My feelings about, because I've been to California, but I've never lived there. The state as a whole, you have to be fairly rich to live there. No.
Well, yeah. Yeah, for sure. But La Jolla is like a very upscale, like, you know, in that show, Grace and Frankie?
Yeah.
Their ex-husbands, I forget their names in the show
now. I don't know their names, yeah.
They live in La Jolla. They end up buying a house in La Jolla.
Okay.
So it's like, and their beach house is in La Jolla that Grace and Frankie end up living in.
Okay.
It's very like...
She.
Yeah. Literally after that, they said they were never apart. They became incredibly inseparable after this first night.
In excess style, never tear us apart.
Yes, for sure. In December 1996, on Kristen's 21st birthday, Greg gave her a dozen American Beauty roses and a diamond ring.
I found it very strange that they were like, this is the narrator. He gave her a dozen American Beauty roses and a diamond ring. I'm like, when I think of red roses, if I'm thinking red rose petals specifically, I think of the movie American Beauty. I did not know that those flowers were called American Beauties.
Is that what they're called?
I don't know.
That's what she's making it sound like. Yeah, because I was like, is that just like the name of the roses? I'm like, just say a dozen red roses. But maybe it is. Maybe it's called that.
One eternity later.
Yeah, but it's weird. This one says, Rosa, American Beauty, is a deep pink rose cultivar bred by Henri Le Deschaux in France in 1875 and was originally named Madame Ferdinand Jamin. I don't know. But in the movie, these rose petals are red. They are not a deep pink. Who's lying here?
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, either way, they got engaged.
Yeah, they did. They sure did.
They sure did. And her favorite movie was American Beauty.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, that plays a role. Kind of.
Torella has never seen American Beauty.
I've never seen it. I don't know. So you're going to have to explain to me what happens in the movie later. Okay. The next year, Greg got a degree in biology and a job on the ground floor of a growing biotech startup. Kristen was fascinated by chemistry and graduated summa cum laude from UC San Diego in 99. They were married on June 5th in an outdoor ceremony in Claremont. I wonder how much that wedding cost.
Probably like a humble $75,000.
Right, yeah. In the 90s.
Yes.
And their honeymoon was snowboarding in British Columbia. That's interesting.
What a, like, cool girl.
I know. That's what I was thinking. I was like, probably everybody's like, your wife is so cool.
You got to go snowboarding on your honeymoon.
Wow. My wife just wanted to go to the beach.
But the beach is fun.
I love the beach. Right? I do not ever want to go snowboarding. Only the beach.
I've been snowboarding and I felt like I got hit by a Mack truck the next day. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not my jam, I don't think.
It's something. It's an experience.
Sure. But everybody said Greg seemed to genuinely love, what's her name again?
Kristen.
I keep wanting to call her Chrissy. I don't know why. Loved Kristen. He genuinely just like wanted to help her. He wanted to do everything for her. This man like felt like she hung the moon.
Mm-hmm.
He loved this woman.
Yes.
So Kristen goes to work in San Diego's medical examiner's office. She's handling crime scene drugs like heroin, OxyContin, methamphetamine, and fentanyl. And at this time, the narrator kept talking about fentanyl and calling it like this rare
opioid
drug.
Yes,
it's everywhere now. Yeah. It's not rare now. Yeah.
In 2004, it must have been very, very rare.
Yeah, at that time, I guess it wasn't, because she just kept talking about it like it was like the unicorn of drugs.
Well, and kind of over explaining, like we as the viewers would not know anything about it.
Exactly. Yeah, they were like really trying to explain like what fentanyl is and all that stuff, and I'm like,
yeah, we got it.
Yeah, isn't that what Michael Jackson died on?
Yeah,
everybody knows about fentanyl.
It's like what they use. Because if you go, I have not gotten a colonoscopy. I've not gotten a colonoscopy. But from people that have gotten colonoscopies, I've heard that that's the drug they use to put you under. And it's like the best sleep you've ever gotten in your entire life. It's amazing. And they're like, okay, the nurses, when they're administering this to you to put you under, they're like, okay, we're going to use this to put you under. It's actually what Michael Jackson died from. Enjoy.
Yeah, but don't worry, you won't die.
Yeah,
why? Probably.
Now
probably
we've got an anxiety attack on our hands. Why would you say that?
Well, you're asleep so fast, there's no time for an anxiety attack.
I mean, I guess, but it's like, why leave you with that? I'd be happier with the Fonz guy being like, and I love Fonzie. Have a nice sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Yeah. Nurses, don't do that. No, that's not nice.
No.
Dan Anderson, a former coworker of Kristen, said that he met her in 99 when she was trying to get into the field, and she did a platform presentation where she got on stage and presented her scientific paper, and it was about a death involving strychnine. Pretty hardcore.
Yeah. Really going for it. She came in hot.
Okay, so her boss at the medical examiner's office was an Australian toxicologist named Michael Robertson. Can you think of anything sexier?
No.
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 This is a problem for Greg DeVillers.
Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, it's like if Heath Ledger himself was a toxicologist.
Come on. I'd get to work early. I'd leave work late.
I would think of working under someone. It'd be, have a whole new meaning for me, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. Yeah. Be like, have you met my super hot boss?
Yeah.
Gosh. He was young and energetic. I mean, he was like, what, only in his 30s then?
Mm-hmm.
He was, they showed pictures. He only looked like he was in his 30s.
Very, very attractive.
Yes, attractive man. And we didn't even get to hear him talk.
That's such a shame.
I know. I mean, come on. So his specialty was fentanyl because it was, they said like 10 times more powerful than morphine. I didn't know that, but that's crazy. Dan Anderson said that it will, this is where they're like really explaining it. He's like,
and it will seriously depress your respiratory system, make you stop breathing, and you will die from it without properly managing the airway.
You stop breathing. End of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Since Kristen also worked with fentanyl, she and Michael kind of shared that interest. Like, fentanyl kind of became her
expertise.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. And they would go to drug conferences together.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, you don't want to go by yourself and you can, you know.
Sure.
Carpool.
Sure.
If there's no extracurricular activities taking place.
Exactly.
So this is one of my favorites. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good. The narrator. Everything was looking rosy for Kristen, but as everyone knows, roses have thorns.
It's just so... We're tying the rose theme in so hardcore.
Like, they are throwing it in your face.
Yeah.
Roses, 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 roses.
It has to be rosy. Like, it's just, yeah, it's funny.
Don't forget about roses, though.
Yeah. Did we mention about roses? On November 6, 2000, something very dark stopped Kristen in her tracks.
And it had nothing, it was not roses.
Well, there were roses.
There were roses there.
Yeah. She calls 911. She says her husband's not breathing.
911 emergency.
Yes, my husband is not breathing. He's cold.
Is he breathing?
No.
No? Okay.
Oh my God.
And when the EMTs arrive at Kristen's apartment, they find Greg laying on the floor, comatose, covered with red rose petals. Next to him was their wedding photo. It was just like a scene out of her favorite movie, American Beauty.
So here's where that scene comes into play.
Okay.
Basically, and it's been a long time since I've seen it, but I remember, like, the theme of it. I remember certain scenes of it. Mina Suvari, great. She's in it. She is best friends with Thora Birch, who is Kevin Spacey's daughter. Kevin Spacey is no longer attracted to his wife, and I cannot remember her name. Oh, actual name. Or in the movie, I can't remember. They're, like, they've been together for a long time. She's very much picture perfection. Everything has to look great, look amazing. She's like trying to keep everything together. And Kevin Spacey is like, forget it. I check out of this marriage. I don't even give a care anymore. So he like quits his job and he just starts like working out a lot. And he falls in love with Mina Suvari because Thora Birch and Mina Suvari are best friends that are also on the cheerleading squad together. Yes. And so he falls in love with her and he just fantasizes about Mina Suvari naked in a pool of just red rose petals. And the rose petals are like strategically placed and they're like floating down on top of her. And that's where I'm thinking that they're getting, because that's what happens in the movie. But
that's what I was wondering. Did somebody, because at one point they talk about how they say something like, just like in the movie, you know, did he do something drastic or whatever? Like, so nothing like that happens in the movie.
Well.
Okay, you guys. We are trying to get to the bottom of this whole comparison between American Beauty and the Kristen Rossum case. So here, Tori looks up information about American Beauty because it's been a while since she's seen it. I've never seen it. And there are some spoiler alerts. There are some spoilers. This is the alert. So if you never saw American Beauty and you don't want any spoilers, you might skip ahead a little bit. Otherwise, we're about to blow the lid wide open.
Kevin Spacey ends up getting murdered in American Beauty.
How? Why? Is it a good movie?
Maybe it is good. Watch it. It is good. So the neighbor, like, there's that, remember that the boy that's got the video camera and he's taping everything and he's like, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Oh. That's from American Beauty.
Oh.
And it's the neighbor, and Thora Birch has a crush on him, but I think he's gay. And he falls in love with Kevin Spacey's character. So he kisses Kevin Spacey. Well, the dad finds out about it, and he comes in and kills Kevin Spacey because he doesn't want anybody to know that his son is gay.
That took a turn.
I know. It says Colonel Fitz didn't want his secret out, and since he kissed Lester, Lester now knows that Fitz is gay. Fitz killed him so that his homosexuality would stay a secret. But I don't think the dad kissed Lester. I think it was the son. Because I know the son... See, I'd have to rewatch it.
So Dr. Helen Smith, if you're not familiar with American Beauty, such as me, myself, she explains that the movie is about two people being trapped in a loveless relationship, and there was like a bunch of rose petals used in the movie, which I think everybody knows that.
Well, yeah, the rose petals represented Kevin Spacey's desire for Angela, the daughter's friend.
Hmm.
Symbolism.
Yeah, creepy, that's your daughter's friend. While EMTs are desperately trying to revive Greg, police are questioning Kristen. She said that Greg wasn't feeling well and stayed home from work that day, and when she checked in on him at lunch, he was unconscious. And an hour later, he was pronounced dead. Tearfully, she told the police that her perfect marriage had gone sour. That morning, she told Greg she was leaving him, and so she thought he got really depressed, he's despondent, he took his own life. He's got the wedding picture there, he's got the...
Rose petals.
It's a whole scene.
It's a very dramatic exit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm only saying that because I know that it's not what actually happened. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not normally how, I feel like not normally how things happen.
Right.
With rose petals everywhere and all the things.
Yeah.
At the hospital, the San Diego medical examiner did rule Greg's death a suicide. Greg didn't leave a suicide note or anything, but at first they didn't think that there was any foul play. Like, it seemed
to check out.
Yeah, it seemed to check out. Immediately, Kristen signed papers to donate Greg's eyes and skin for transplants. It was like, I don't know, I'm a donor, like, on my driver's license and stuff, but I don't know, just thinking about eyes specifically, it hit home for me a little
bit. Yeah, I don't know what the deal is. I mean, I'm so grateful for anybody that chooses to be a donor, because I think that saves lives. It got really real when they said eyes and skin. I was like, oh, geez, okay.
And the rest of his body would be cremated, which also, I get that she's the wife. But she did say that she was leaving him. You'd think she would let the family make that decision.
And for it to, like, immediately, like, who knows how that whole conversation went down. But what if she was like, okay, let's get this going. Come on. Let's go.
I mean, I think that's what she did, because she was just like, let's get this pushed through.
They said immediately, so.
Thank goodness, though, Greg's brother called the San Diego police less than 24 hours later. And his name is Jerome. And he's like, there's absolutely no way this was a suicide. You need to look into this. There's no way it was a suicide.
Yeah, Jerome said that Greg was anti-drugs. And so the family got an injunction to stop the cremation and went to get an autopsy.
Yeah.
And again, like you said, thank God they did.
Exactly. Because if they hadn't done all that, I mean,
she could have gotten away with it.
Yeah, absolutely. The results of the autopsy blew everyone away. Not only did Greg have clonazepam in his system, but he had very high levels of fentanyl.
Hmm. Who has access to fentanyl?
And at that time, it wasn't like everybody was buying it on the street.
You could
the
only...
The way they talked about it,
right,
I guess.
Right, and the clonazepam, that is a date rape drug.
So what it does, though, is it makes you relax, or to the point that you don't really have control over what's happening. You're completely out of it.
Yes.
It's like in that movie, she took, how many Xanax did you take or whatever? try four.
Exactly.
It's like that.
So Dr. Blackburn, the medical examiner, said that Greg had been in a coma for several hours, and then the fentanyl was introduced, and that shows that Greg couldn't have possibly given himself the fatal dose of fentanyl.
Yeah, so who was with him? By her own admission, she was with him that morning. She was mm-hmm. taking care of him, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Kristen is the main suspect. Mm-hmm. When they searched her work, they found that 15 skin patches of fentanyl were missing. That's a lot.
That's a ton.
Yeah. David Hendren, prosecutor, said all three cases where the fentanyl were missing were cases that Kristen had worked on herself. So these would have been cases that she would have definitely handled the evidence. And obviously nobody's double-checking this stuff because she's just stealing it.
Mm-hmm. But if this is anything like the other case, because on Netflix there's the case, I mean the docuseries.
Oh, how to fix a drug
scandal. Yes, how to fix a drug scandal. In both of those cases that they're talking about, and these are in Massachusetts, but both of those cases that they're talking about, both of the places that they're working, the labs for toxicology, they're so understaffed and so underfunded that there should be multiple people in the lab at one time, but they're not. And this is recent that these cases were going on. So if we had to judge just off of that, I would say it's not unlikely for toxicology labs, medical examiner labs, not to have the staffing that they should. And so that means that people cannot be held accountable all the time.
They're just trusting the people they have working there to like do what they're supposed to do, not steal.
Yeah.
The honor system, basically.
Yeah.
Detectives brought Kristen in for questioning, and the detective, Lori Agnew, said that when she saw her, she was like, oh, this is a doper. This is somebody on drugs. She's using meth, just based on her movements, the way that she looked. And I was like, oh.
I didn't get that.
She's on meth.
But they only showed stills of her, and then that's when they showed her being interrogated.
Yeah. Yeah, and she definitely was moving around really weird and, like, acting weird.
Robert Petrichek, a computer forensic expert, said that he's worked on a lot of drug cases and that she looked like, per his words, a drug freak.
All right. She had all her teeth, though, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Alex Lobig, defense attorney for Kristen, said that meth is one of the scarier drugs that he's been exposed to. It induces paranoia, makes you react aggressively, clouds your judgment. It literally does everything. The only thing it does to you are bad things after the first time you use it or the first few times that you use it. And like you get that euphoric high. And then after that, it's just
downhill from there.
Yeah, downhill. She had a pipe hidden in her lab at work and had been tested and her DNA was on it. So she's definitely using at work.
Well, of course she is. I mean, that's the best place for her to get the drugs, right?
Absolutely.
So Kristen then confesses to using meth since she was in high school. And she said it made her feel euphoric and it also helped with her schoolwork.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense because meth is an upper, right? So she's just like, well, that's what we've seen in other cases. When I watch Intervention, which it's a deep, dark hole that I go in whenever I'm ready to watch an episode of Intervention. And then I watch 4 episodes in a row, and then I have to sit in the dark and think about what I've just done to myself. It's so depressing. But in a lot of those cases, when it comes to, I don't want to say it's only women that deal with this, but a lot of times it's women that deal with this. They cannot get on top of all of the pressures of the world that are either put upon them by themselves or, you know, like self-induced pressure or pressures from other people. So they turn to drugs like meth and coke and all these kinds of things to just stay awake because they're, 24 usable hours in every day according to the drug?
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's like, okay, I don't have enough energy to get everything I need to get done, so
if I need help. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad. Crazy. It is. Yeah. It is. It's very sad.
After she graduated, her addiction took over, and it almost ended her life. So when she was in Tijuana, she met Greg. She was out of money. She had nowhere to live. She was strung out, and he helped her. It was like he wanted to fix her, and he saw something good in her.
He saw potential in her.
Yeah, and he genuinely loved her. And so he was just like, I need to help this person, which is so sad because she took advantage of that.
Yes, and it really seemed like he genuinely just cared.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't getting anything out of it in return. He just wanted to help.
Yeah. And they also found out during this interrogation that she had, in fact, been sleeping with her boss, Michael Robertson.
I could have called that one a long time ago, but right? Okay.
And Helen Smith talked about, like, she said, usually when women cheat, it's because of, like, an emotional reason. But for Kristen, it's like something they're not getting in their relationship. But for Kristen, she had somebody who adored her. And for her, she said that stability was probably smothering to her because she wanted this, like, fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants kind of lifestyle.
The adventure, the excitement.
Yeah, and Greg was very, he was stable. He had a routine. He wasn't doing all kinds of, like, crazy things, you know?
Well, yeah, I'm sure he was like, you know, it'd be really sexy if we went to bed by 9.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah. It's like that, I saw a thing on Instagram that was like, or maybe it was on Twitter. It was like this, I don't know, couple talking to each other or something. I don't know. It was like a joke thing, but it's like, name one thing you want to try in bed. And the woman was like, sleep a full 8 hours or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
It's your sexual fantasy.
Yeah. So she found excitement in this relationship with Michael Robertson. And maybe the fact that it was like, had to be a secret was exciting to her. I don't know. But she definitely was trying to find some excitement. Kristen admitted that Greg knew about her and Michael and had threatened to ruin both of their careers if she didn't stop. That sounds like big fat motive to me. But she's like, I didn't kill him. No. He totally just died out of nowhere. He just died. But like, I didn't do it. But he did say that he was going to ruin both my career and my boss's, which is like so important. But I didn't do anything.
No. So the investigation drug on for 6 months with no, I mean, they had leads, but like they weren't getting anywhere with the case. Then on June 25th, 2001, the cops arrested Kristen and she was charged with first degree murder and thrown in jail. Kristen's parents paid her $1.25 million bond.
Wow.
Then picked her up at the jail in their new Mercedes.
They brought the pearls with them. That way, as she walked out, because she was definitely wearing pearls as she walked out.
Yes, exactly. Well, you'd really need accessories, make an outfit. Can't stress it enough.
Sure.
You're not going to want to walk out with a...
No accessories on this guy.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't want to be seen like that.
Exactly.
In public.
Yeah.
But the bloom was definitely off Kristen's rose.
I mean...
Would the jury believe that Greg committed suicide American Beauty style? Or would they convict her of murder?
When they said that, I was like, oh, so somebody in American Beauty committed suicide?
Nope, didn't happen.
Didn't happen. Okay. So just with roses present.
That's literally it.
That's all it is. Opening arguments began on October 15th, 2002 in San Diego County Superior Court, and Kristen was facing life in prison. Prosecutors portrayed Kristen as a lying, manipulative druggie, a woman who from day one screwed around on the man that loved her so.
I mean, I kind of understand.
They're not wrong.
No.
Yeah.
Did she or did she not screw around on the man that loved her so?
Yeah, totally. All the time, apparently.
Yeah.
Robert Petrichek said that the emails between Michael and Kristen were very passionate, and then the next email would be something between Kristen and Greg. So she was like...
Definitely. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that when you carry on an affair like that, it is... Premeditated is not the right word. She knew what she was doing.
Yeah, and you have to be duplicitous, right? Like, you have to be able to...
That's a great word.
...have this relationship with this person and then turn around and still have the... Try to act like the same with the other person so they don't know. Like,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't like this thing that happened where she's like, oh my gosh, I messed up. You know, our marriage is not going well. She definitely kind of played both sides of that for sure.
For sure. Alex Lobig, Kristen's attorney. I got confused because I was like, it says her attorney, but is it her attorney? But yeah, he
Because he was talking about Kristen's case and, like, the way that she was reacting or the things that she did. He was talking about it like, well, I mean, because when we have watched other cases, even after it's been wrapped up and everything, their attorneys are like, listen, I believe everything that they said. She did not do anything wrong.
Yeah.
She's 100% innocent. Alex Lobig was kind of like,
people aren't mistakenly poisoned. There's such a lethal poison involved that is not available easily at all. This was, from the very start, first-degree murder or suicide.
Either he put himself in a coma and killed himself with fentanyl, or she did it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah, because I was like, wait, I must have read wrong which attorney this was. But yeah, he does. I mean, he knows she did it. Like, there's no other explanation either. Especially once the prosecution drops their bombshell.
Yes.
Evidence.
Well, and so Alex, he put people on the stand, witnesses, that said that Greg had grown despondent, that Kristen's affair and her problem with drugs were pushing him towards the edge.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of goes hand in hand with, or lends to, a suicide.
Right. So they're trying to definitely still play that. Okay, but we don't know. Was it a suicide? Like, he's like, can't rule out suicide.
Yeah, I mean, Kristen's actions definitely pushed him in this direction.
Yeah.
That's not a surprise.
Yeah.
Not a question.
But the prosecution was like, okay, fine. We'll say he was depressed even. Like, if you want to say he was depressed, we'll say that. We're not going to try and say that he wasn't. It absolutely had nothing to do with his death, though. Because even if he was depressed, he still cannot put himself into a coma and then give himself more fentanyl. It was not a suicide. Mm-hmm. Like, he could be depressed and still get murdered. Like, how would he even get the fentanyl? They knew for sure she was stealing meth for her own personal use.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the fentanyl was missing from her work. Greg didn't have access to her work.
No, and like we said, if someone is in a coma, how would that person inject themselves or put the patches on or whatever and overdose on fentanyl? It's just impossible. It's physically impossible.
Exactly. It just cannot happen. And Dr. James Murray is like, it's just so weird that she studies toxicology, but also does those drugs. Like, she knows the effect it can have on the human body.
Yes, like, she is fluent and almost an expert on the harms of these drugs, yet at the same time is partaking in drug use herself.
Right. Yeah. But it's also like, you drive by a hospital and there's always nurses and doctors smoking outside and, like, you know, all the things. It's like,
they know.
Yeah.
But I mean, the risk is worth.
Yeah.
The.
Well, addiction is addiction is addiction.
Like, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just your brain tells you this is different, you know, like, mm-hmm. whatever. Prosecutors called witnesses who said that Kristen had bragged about finding the perfect drug to kill with. Okay, so that's not a good look, Kristen.
Mm-mm.
And Michael had just written a paper on a fentanyl murder, and investigators found it on his computer. So the defense is like, well, okay, but this is all circumstantial. There's no proof of how the drugs got into Greg's body. We don't know who put them into Greg's body. I think we can say for sure it was not Greg.
Yeah, I mean, let's just say, for instance, if we go down that road and we're like, okay, so two people were at the apartment that day. That's for sure. Two people. Mm-hmm. Greg, Kristen.
Mm-hmm.
One person is in a coma and incapacitated, cannot even move a finger. The other person is completely able-bodied. Sure, you can't prove who did it. But
yeah, we don't have video of it happening.
I don't need a jump to conclusions, Matt.
No.
To know where that's going to go.
Yeah, exactly. Prosecutors also talked about the reason Kristen wanted to kill Greg. It was that he was going to betray her, quote unquote, and everything that she worked for. She was working in a prestigious toxicology lab, and she felt like Greg was going to expose the affair and expose her drug use, which would mean she'd lose her job.
She would lose everything that she worked
for. She'd lose everything. And she probably felt the only way to stop that was to just get rid of Greg.
Mm-hmm.
It would all come down, though, to how the jury felt about Kristen. So she did take the stand, and she was on the stand for 3 days. And they said that the first day, she did really well. It was all going pretty rosy. if you ask me.
Right.
But then the second and third day, she was just lying all over the place. And it was just becoming really obvious. Obviously, she forgot what she said the first day and just came back on the stand and was, I mean, it's very difficult to keep that many lies straight.
Well, and her ex-boyfriend, Theodore, said, like, one of Kristen's favorite things to do is lie. She is an incredible liar. And that he thinks that it's because she believed her own lies
mm-hmm.
that she was so good at it.
Yeah. She's got to have some kind of a personality disorder, you think?
Yes.
Yeah, there's got to be something there because, again, she's the kind of person who, if she gets caught in a lie, that doesn't embarrass her. That doesn't affect her. Mm-mm. She's just like, whatever. And she'll double down on it. She'll keep going because she believes it.
Yeah, somebody without a personality disorder that would cause you to be like that, that's not normal. That does not just happen.
Right, because if they get caught in a lie, you're like, man, I'm embarrassed. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that or like whatever, you know.
Totally.
That's not the case for her. She does not care about that at all. One of her lies, though, was the one about the rose petals on Greg's body. She said it was a last effort to be romantic from Greg, covering himself in her favorite flower like a scene from her favorite movie. But prosecutors dug up the receipts and found that they were bought at 12:41 p.m. on the day of Greg's death when she said she was feeding Greg soup. So she says she's home on the lunch break. She is actually out purchasing roses.
Like a dozen roses.
Mm-hmm.
With baby's breath.
Yeah. Yeah, they found the bouquet on the receipt and everything. So she was there purchasing it and lied about where she was. So Greg didn't buy the flowers. He wasn't trying to do some romantic thing. He was passed out on the floor. She goes and buys those flowers, covers him with them, and then gives him a fatal dose.
Mm-hmm. But Kristen was so good at manipulating. Well, she tried to be so good at manipulating the jury.
Yeah.
She is one of those scary, crazy people that can cry on command. She was making a big show of like how upset she was. She was giving these looks to the jury like, oh, feel sorry for me, dabbing her eyes a lot. Like she was really playing the victim role.
Oh yeah, playing it up.
Yes.
Yeah.
She really sold it. Closing arguments were made on November 6th and 7th of 2002. The jurors were out less than 8 hours in their verdict, guilty in the first degree murder of Greg.
On December 12th, 2002, Kristen was given life without parole and incarcerated in the Central California Women's Facility in Coachella. She's currently serving a life sentence without the possibility of parole. Her parents have sold her story to a Hollywood film company. Her parents are garbage!
They are garbage. But they do need to fund that new Mercedes, I'm sure.
Well, sure. Pearls well, and everyone. They've got to get their $1.25 million back, right?
Yeah, they do. Who just has that?
Yeah.
So I looked up a little bit more of information about the case now, because once I saw that there was the film, like the rights to the story were sold mm-hmm. to a film company, I'm like, well, did this film ever actually happen? And it did not. So in 2006, both Rossum and San Diego County were named as defendants in a wrongful death lawsuit filed by the DeVillers family. A jury ordered Rossum to pay more than $100,000 million in punitive damages.
$100,000 million?
What did I say that? Oh my gosh. I'm like taking a page from your book here.
$100,000 million bajillion dollars.
That was funny. Let's just name off every sum of money that I can think of. A jury ordered Rossum to pay more than $100 million in punitive damages, while San Diego County was ordered to pay $1.5 million. The family had originally asked for $50 million in punitive damages, but jurors awarded double that amount after estimating Rossum could have made $60 million from selling the rights to her story. John Gomez, the lawyer for the DeVillers family, acknowledged that the family may never see the money, but wanted to make sure Rossum does not profit from her crime. A judge later reduced the punitive damages award to $10 million, but allowed the $4.5 million compensatory award to stand.
Hmm. In September 2010, a three-judge panel of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that Rossum's lawyer should have challenged the prosecution's assertion by doing its own test that she poisoned her husband with fentanyl. The panel ordered a San Diego federal court to hold a hearing into whether the defense's error could have affected the trial's outcome. On September 13, 2011, the U.S. Court of Appeals withdrew its opinion and replaced it with a one-paragraph statement that under a new Supreme Court precedent, Rossum's petition was denied. That makes no sense to me.
And that's so much money and so much time wasted.
That by doing its own test, that Rossum's lawyer should have done its own test to verify that he had fentanyl in his system. That's what they were saying.
Mm-hmm.
That never happens. Like, usually the medical examiner's office does the test and pretty much everybody accepts it as fact unless, even when you have new evidence, even when you're like, there's DNA that was never tested in this case and now we have the possibility to do that, a lot of appeals still get denied. It's weird that, it's just weird to me that this even would happen.
Yes.
Following his termination by the San Diego Medical Examiner's Office, Michael Robertson returned to his home in Brisbane, Australia, ostensibly to care for his ailing mother. In September of 2013, the San Diego Reader reported that in 2006, prosecutors secretly filed a criminal complaint charging Robertson, who was named as an unindicted co-conspirator at Rossum's trial, with one count of conspiracy to obstruct justice. If the Australian government elects to extradite Robertson or he voluntarily returns to the U.S., he could face 3 years in prison. As of 2014, Robertson is running a forensic consulting service in Brisbane. What did he do? Maybe he knew that she stole stuff or something and covered it up?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, could you get the boss of, like, a manager of a lab in trouble if you don't put enough people in place to kind of check each other and then something like this happens?
I feel like it's a stretch, but because it also says conspiracy to obstruct justice. So he
was covering up something.
Or maybe he just wasn't forthcoming in his interviews or lied about something.
Yeah, maybe he decided to not testify or talk openly about what
he or said. Maybe he lied about his affair with her and then they found the emails and they were like, oh yeah, you did. Yeah. I don't know, but yeah, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
there's that.
Yeah, I wonder why the DeVillers also sued the county.
Yeah, I'm not really sure about that, but I am glad. Well, could the county have been sued because a government worker was the one who killed their son using...
Yes, you're exactly right. I bet that's exactly what it is, because she stole from the medical examiner's office.
So it's like property of the county.
Yes, yeah.
And she used that to murder.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
But I am really glad that the Rossums have no way of profiting off of this
crime. Okay, even if that's your kid and you're like, wow, you really messed up. That's not okay. I still love you, you know, like, I'm going to forgive you, whatever. I could not turn around and be like, you know, it'd be super cool if they made a movie about it. And then I could actually get super, I'll give you money on your commissary or whatever. You're in jail for life. So I'm definitely going to get that money at this point. Like, no, I do not want to profit off of the fact that my child murdered somebody. That's not okay.
In so many of these cases that we cover, it's amazing, and by amazing, I mean terrible, how people who are supposed to be parts of someone else's family,
yeah,
like, just because that your son-in-law is not your own flesh and blood, for you to be like, I mean, if it can make me a buck, that's fine with me.
Yeah, exactly. Who cares? Like, I'm not going to try and respect his legacy or his memory, you know?
Yeah.
That's awful.
I don't get it.
What a bunch of jerks.
Totally.
Well, that's the episode, guys.
Man, oh man.
Let us know what you think about it. This one was longer. It was an hour.
Wow.
Wow, yeah.
Well, we did go off on a tangent about American Beauty. I think that we're doing that a lot lately. You know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But I didn't know about the movie, and it kind of plays a role, so.
It does definitely play a role. But we did have to work out some kinks about, like, was there a suicide? Was there not a suicide? We don't know, all the things. But
sure.
I think it was legitimately just, it was the aspect of the couple not being happy and the rose petals.
Yeah.
Case
yeah.
closed.
And she was trying to definitely stage it so that it seemed like he was doing something that was, that would get a reaction out of her.
Absolutely.
Like
it was for her specifically.
Yeah.
So we're going to get off of here. We're going to go watch American Beauty.
Yeah, exactly. Cancel the rest of our day. We got to watch American Beauty now.
Yes. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.